In the Apostles' Creed, we profess a belief in the resurrection of the body and life everlasting. But have you ever wondered what that glorified, resurrected body is going to be like? And furthermore, what are the implications for how we should treat this current body in this present life if we know that we're going to be resurrected in a glorified body? These are the questions we explore in this podcast and more, so stay tuned. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to A Thriving Catholic Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Castillo, and I'm joined here in studio today by a very special guest, my resident theologian and my husband, David Castillo. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, my dear. I got to say, first of all, that I am incredibly honored to be here. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
First of all, and I've been listening to you for about 14 years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
debatable as to whether you've actually applied everything, but well, welcome. I appreciate you joining me from all the way down the hall.
It's super great to be here, and I'm very excited and looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah. So, what I have David here to talk with us about today is the question of basically, what will our glorified bodies be like in the resurrection? So now that we are Catholics in the Easter season, you know, a lot of our attention is focused now on Christ's bodily resurrection. And so I've been really curious lately and thinking a lot about what that means for us in terms of what are our future glorified resurrected bodies going to be like, and why, how will that impact how we actually care for the bodies that we have right now?
Absolutely.
So that's why I have David here on the show to talk about this, because actually, I'm just going to let you briefly introduce yourself and let everyone know, like, what is your background in theology and why are you here to talk about
this? First I got to say, you introduced me as a theologian. I do not consider myself a theologian. I think those are like ones that actually write books and papers. I just read a lot of those things and then take what I learn and impart and how I'm formed and just usually give that to others. Maybe one day I'll be considered more of a theologian, but anyway. So you asked me about myself, who I am, and my background in theology. First of all, I have been an active duty Army officer for over 20 years now, and my occupational specialty has been mostly in the military police corps in the Army. Later time in my career, when I figured it was time at least to start thinking about what life after the military would begin to look like, I decided I want to go deeper in my knowledge of the faith. I had always had a mind for religious and theological subjects, but of course, history, philosophy, morality, etc. And I was very motivated by St. Augustine's definition of theology as faith seeking understanding. And I thought that was just a great definition for kind of where I was in my life at the time. So after I finished my first master's degree, I decided to put myself through 5 years of a very challenging yet enlightening and rewarding curriculum through Catholic Distance University, where I received a MA, Master's of Arts in Catholic Theology back in 2018. And since that time, I've just been utilizing that degree, teaching and preaching in a variety of capacities, usually in support of the military Catholic communities we've lived in as a catechist, whether that's OCIA, formerly RCIA, confirmation, post-confirmation, young adult formation, theology on taps, and various other types of adult formation. I also absorb and impart a lot of my theological formation within my lay Dominican community, and just continue to study, which is one of the foundational pillars and charisms of the Order of Preachers. So,
yeah. So this is why I refer to David as my resident theologian, like whether he considers himself to be one or not. He does have that master's in theology. And you should see our like house. You should see the number of like theology books we have, we own. It's like a library. It's like a theological library here.
But wait, no. Before I left out, I gotta say that, yeah. Of course, I am married to you, mm-hmm. and
the smartest father, thing she's done, yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And, father to our three amazing kids, and which above all else is my primary life's work. And again, when it comes to theology, I'm hoping a lot of what I gathered my studies and what I take in, I also can impart to the home. So,
yeah. And also to the listeners of my podcast.
Yeah.
So this is all good. Great. Well, so the impetus for this podcast episode, it comes from a conversation that we were having recently, just talking about like the resurrection and what that means, what our glorified bodies are going to be like. And so one of the things that I thought would be interesting to talk about today would be like, you know, I know that theologians have written and talked about what we can expect our glorified bodies to be like based on Christ's post-resurrection appearances. So we have like some inkling, some clue of what our glorified bodies are going to be like. And I guess, you know, the basis for that is, you know, what Christ's body itself was like post-resurrection, right? So am I off the mark here?
Let me just say, it's just great that we're having this conversation now. You know, well, we both love Easter, and we always try to make Easter a very big deal in our household, mm-hmm. because, you know, everybody's like, oh, you know, Christmas. Yeah, Christmas is great, of course, obviously. But there's always in our culture, especially, there's this emphasis more on Christmas than Easter, you mm-hmm. know, and we can get into all the cultural reasons why that is, of course, in this podcast. But you and I always get excited about Easter. We try to import that to our kids, and we always try to really do a big Easter. So I'm excited about this because, you know, this is the reason for it. This is the central element of our faith, the resurrection.
Yeah.
And so it's also great now. You know, we just did a class on this, you know, just this past week to our community for some of the post-confirmation teens and those adults that wanted to join in that. There's just this past weekend. So, you know, so in the resurrection appearances, the evangelists, I think, are very clear to point out that Jesus' resurrected body is indeed his body and his original body that is now in a glorified state. He still bears the marks of the crucifixion and makes it clear to his disciples that he is not a ghost or a spirit, but still flesh and blood that is now renewed, transformed, and glorified. But when I think about how it pertains to our own bodies in relation to Jesus' resurrection, I really like what Pope Benedict XVI, who of blessed memory, what he said about the resurrection in his Jesus of Nazareth series, and that I'm mostly paraphrasing here. The resurrection opens up for us a new dimension of human existence, and that it is not an isolated event that we can just set aside as something limited to the past, but constitutes an evolutionary leap. And opens up for us a new kind of future for mankind. So again, we reflect back on Jesus and how it maybe pertained to us, which is kind of cool and exciting to think about. So what can a glorified body do? Well, we know it can appear and disappear somewhat precipitously. You know, it can pass through walls, body bilocate. We know it was hard for the disciples to recognize Jesus first because of this new state. You know, think of Mary Magdalene at the empty tomb. You know, think of the disciples on the road to Emmaus, even the disciples on the Sea of Tiberias, the Sea of Galilee in John's gospel. Then, you know, they can't recognize him, but we know in those accounts that it is the same body that has now made the evolutionary change, so to speak, which I think is really cool. And you especially, you being a student of science and everything that you've done, you can appreciate that. I think that use of the term evolutionary leap. I think, of course, the Catechism, paragraphs 988 through 1001, addresses this critical part of the creed and how this has been an essential part of the Christian faith from the beginning. You know, every Sunday we recite the Apostles' Creed, and right there at the end, we always say, "And the resurrection of the dead." And we kind of pass it over.
Yeah, we say it so fast. Like, we don't even.
There's reason. It's there at the end. It's the most powerful aspect of what we're professing in the creed. You know, and like I said, it has been such an essential part of the Christian faith at the beginning. Of course, we can reference St. Paul's letter to the Romans and the Corinthians, how the profession of Christ's resurrection was such an essential component to his preaching. And he conveyed that Christ's resurrection was going to be transferred over to us through the power of the sacrament of baptism. I think paragraph 997 of the Catechism puts it so clearly, and it states that in death, the separation of the soul from the body, the human body decays, and the soul goes to meet God while awaiting its reunion with its glorified body. God, in his almighty power, will definitely grant incorruptible life to our bodies by reuniting them with our souls through the power of Jesus' resurrection. So I have to be honest. Sometimes I think I've told you, I know I've told you this before. I sometimes bristle when I hear people say certain platitudes that I think, although with great sincerity, you know, when they say things like, this is, you know, referring to this world, you know, this is not our home, you know, this is not our home. And there's always this kind of, I think, this unconscious Gnostic element of Christianity where this thought that the end of the Christian life, the end of faith is just to escape from these bodies and just go to heaven. And that's the end, right? You know, but no, that's not in scripture. That's not the tradition of the church. And certainly it was, I'm just reading from the catechism. I mean, that's not what the catechism says. Mm-hmm. You know, I think so a lot of times we say these things, we're forgetting that this is, that even heaven is an intermediate state of happiness and union of God. Yes, certainly. But also this world is our home. And even it must pass through a process of renewal and, dare I say, even resurrection. Again, as St. Paul says in his letter to the Romans in chapter 8, verses 21 to 23, that creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and obtain the glorious liberty of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning with labor pains together until now. And not only the creation, we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit grown inwardly as we await for adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. And of course,
it's not just going to be our bodies that are reunited with our souls and glorified and resurrected, but also the earth itself.
Yes.
Like everything gets renewed.
Absolutely. And I always kind of, again, I go back to bristle this whole, you know, this hyper-environmentalism, I think, that our culture is kind of going through right now. Of course, we should be good stewards of the environment. We should protect it. We believe that the world itself, creation itself, is going to go also through this process of renewal along with our bodies. And we just can't forget that. This, again, this is part of God's revelation, scripture, tradition.
Yeah, I think it's a really good parallel, though. Like, this is part of why I wanted to talk about this because, okay, just backing up really quick to recap what you were talking about when you were talking about, like, just basically the attributes of what we can expect our glorified body to be. Like, you know, we're going to be able to appear and disappear.
Yeah.
Like Jesus did. We'll be able to pass through walls into, like, locked rooms, like, suddenly appear places, like, far, like, I guess this is teleportation, right? Yeah. This is finally teleportation, maybe?
I wish I had that power now with our children.
Me too.
I wish we could just appear when they're doing something bad, and they're like, oh, Dad, you're there, and I'm like, ha.
Yeah, gotcha. No, I think that would be, that would be really bad for our kids. So this is interesting to think about. But the other thing, like, I wanted to highlight here is you're talking about, and you made this parallel about, okay, the earth is going to be renewed and glorified as well, but we still have to be good stewards of the earth now. And the other point you were making, too, that I think this is just parallel, is that obviously we need to be good stewards of our bodies now, too, because, it'll like, well, okay. One thing you did emphasize that these are going to be the same bodies. The body mm-hmm. that we currently are in, like this body, this is going to be our resurrected body as well. Now, what that's, how that's going to be, like how God is going to make that happen, I don't know. Like, this is not something that I know all the ins and outs of. But, you know, he's God. He can do whatever he wants. And so we see that it's going to be the same body. One of the things that I think a lot of Catholics struggle with, and like you were saying, this is kind of like subconscious. I don't think we realize that we're falling into this trap of thinking that, you know, we just have to escape these physical bodies so we can be unencumbered souls, which is totally missing the point that we are actually a body-soul composite. Like, we are not two separate, you know, things. We're just one united nature. Like,
it's very Gnostic, very Hellenistic kind of Greek philosophy kind of thinking, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's kind of maybe entered into back into regular, sometimes Christian parlance, you know, we're talking about mm-hmm. what the end of our lives are going to be. But yeah, that comes up, this kind of, that this encumbrance of the body, you know,
mm-hmm. or like or like the body is bad and the soul is good. And, and I know that a lot of just like well-meaning, like really well-meaning Christians and Catholics even will really embrace this idea of like, I really need to care about my spiritual life. I really need to care about my prayer life. But what I do with my body is like not that important. It's like secondary. And so, yeah.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think so. What I'm going to talk about now from the Catechism and also from St. Paul, going back to St. Paul again, you know, I just love this quote because I think it meshes so well with what you're doing with the Thriving Catholic. And this is paragraph 1004, which also cites, like I said, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 13 to 15 and 19 to 20. And this is what the Catechism says. It says, in expectation of that day, the believer's body and soul already participate in the dignity of belonging to Christ. Like this body, our believer's body right now, it already does that.
Like right now. Yeah.
Right now. This dignity entails the demand that we should treat with respect his own body, but also the body of every other person, especially the suffering. And this is going to St. Paul. The body is meant for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. And God raised the Lord, and will also raise us up by his power. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? You are not your own. So glorify God in your body. So this, again, I think this is so critical. Yeah. So this goes back. Yeah. Stewardship of the environment. Yes. Stewardship of our bodies. Yeah. It says right here, we need to respect our own body, not just look at it as like, oh, this is this flesh pot I need to get out of someday. I can't wait to just, you know, be free of this. That is not it. That is not the end.
Or even now to like, you know, like you were just saying, like our bodies need to be treated with dignity because we glorify God in our current bodies now. And a lot of times I know people, especially who are, you know, suffering with a chronic illness or, you know, a disease or a condition that's causing a lot of suffering in their physical bodies right now. It can be very easy to like fall into this like me versus my body kind of mentality. You know, like I've actually heard people use the expression my body has failed me or something in its nature. And it's like, you know, again, these are certainly crosses. Like I, you know, and I'm not downplaying them like or mitigating them. Like it's definitely across to have to deal with some of these chronic issues or conditions, or even something like infertility. You know, these are crosses that we bear in these bodies. And sometimes it can be very hard for us because we're like, I don't understand why I'm going through this kind of suffering. And again, it just really goes back to the problem of suffering, the problem of evil and in the first, you know, all of those things. And so there is no simple, pat, easy answer to it. So while we don't 100% understand why we are dealing with some of the things we might be dealing with in our bodies right now, I mean, obviously, we're not living in our glorified bodies yet. These are not, this is not the final iteration of our body. We know that eventually these bodies will be resurrected and glorified, and they will be, I mean, a whole, like you were saying, like Pope Benedict the 16th said, like, this is going to be a whole evolution of this. Yeah. It will be so different. Yeah. It will be so, it's hard for us to even imagine, because we think about it, it's like, oh, it'll be a perfect body. And it's like, well, what even is a perfect body? Yeah. You know, it'll just be, it'll be like a whole new level.
Yeah, we
of
don't
body.
Know. Like, yeah, even what you just said is, you know, Christ bore, he still bore the wounds of his passion, you know, the probably you imagine like the marks from the crown of thorns, obviously the nail marks in his hands and his feet, the spear stab wound in his side, you know, so we can even think about that. Maybe sometimes we might even bear some of those aspects of our suffering that mm-hmm. is united with Christ, even in our renewed bodies. I mean, they'd be like, oh my gosh, that might be horrible, you know, but no, but we can reflect on the power, the mysterious power behind redemptive suffering. Mm-hmm. Because like I said earlier, we are united with Christ's resurrection in our baptism. So everything that we have now, we're experiencing a little bit of the resurrection right now in our own lives, so that we can die and rise with Christ, you know, through that suffering and in the joys that we also experience. It's all united. It's all summed up in Christ. I think it's easy to say that when you're not the one maybe experiencing intense suffering, like some people are who say their bodies are failing them. But yeah, I think that's the truth of that. I think that's the objective truth of our faith, is that it is all united to Christ, and that we are experiencing a resurrection right now, and we can live with that, the grace, and that comes from the hope that knowing that it's going to be renewed, it's going to be restored, it's going to be transformed, evolved, glorified in this new state. And I get excited when I think about that, mm-hmm. you know, but it doesn't come without its difficulties too. You know, I mean, I'll share an example, something that I talked about. You know, we just went to Mainz, you know, Germany, a couple months back, you know, and we went to St. John's Church, it's now an evangelical Protestant church now, but it used to be the original cathedral of Mainz, you know, and of course, you know, there, they've doing all this, you know, we're walking through and they're doing all this mm-hmm. great excavation and stuff that's in there, because they discovered there's, wow, this old cathedral that's there that goes back from like the 8th, 9th centuries, early 11th century. And one of the first things you see there is the coffin they discovered of old Archbishop Erkenbald, who used to be the Archbishop of Mainz back in like the late 10th, early 11th century. And I was thinking about the resurrection, because there is this, that you could see the coffin there, and then next to it is this picture with the top off the coffin, and then you look in and you see kind of old Archbishop Erkenbald's remains, and it's just kind of like can you really tell? It wasn't even human remains. It kind of looked like a heap of like, kind of like he's probably wearing his vestments when he was buried. There's probably some things in there that look like bones, and looks kind of like, kind of like just dirt and rock, and they're like, oh yeah, this was his remains. There's actually human DNA and mm-hmm. pieces of the body there and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's gonna be like resurrected. Kind of weird. You kind of see things like that, and you might even think about that when people are like cremated, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, the church begrudgingly condones cremation, but doesn't like give like a glowing approval of it. I mean, it just kind of says, if you really need to have that. So we have columbariums and, you know, Catholic churches and things like that. But, you know, the church's intent is we get buried whole in our bodies. And again, I just thought back to Erkenbald, and I was like, you know, God is going to raise that heap of old Archbishop Erkenbald's remains, hopefully if he's destined for the resurrection to life, God willing. He's going to resurrect those remains, and the remains of even those that are, you know, kind of buried. And so as God can create something out of nothing, you know, he's going to take even those bodily remains that are in the tomb and make it into the new renewed life, you know, my own rational mind sometimes sees those things, and I just kind of like, it's always like a head scratcher. I'm like, what, really? Oh, that looks okay. Oh, hey, you know, you just trust in God that that's, he's going to make that happen. So yeah, you know, even those human remains, even the cremated remains, you know, bodies that are still in the Titanic at the bottom of the Atlantic, you know, all that will be reconstituted, renewed, and resurrected. You know, Jesus talks about Matthew 25. It's a resurrection of the good and the bad, the, you know, the sheep and the goats. Everybody is going to experience this.
How old do you think we'll be?
You know, I know you and I have talked about that all the time. And yeah, I know. I don't know which theologian, you know, speculated that everyone's going to be 33 years old because that's the age that Jesus died at, you know. So
I wonder about, like, especially for babies, you know, especially for babies that have been, you know, lost either to miscarriage or to abortion. Like, those bodies are destined for resurrection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well. And so, but... You know, they. I wonder how old they will be. What they will be like? Will they be? Will they be babies? Will they be grown ups? I don't know.
Like it is all speculative. I mean, we don't really know.
There is kind of a lot of speculation. I know, and I was interested. I was reading recently a lot about near death experiences, which are kind of a different phenomenon, because I guess this would be, you know, this would be kind of like that temporary in between, like before the resurrection. If you were going to have a near death experience, it wouldn't be like your body. It would just be like, you know, your soul, that ethereal part of your, you know, being. So it makes me wonder, like, because of course people in near death experiences will often see loved ones, and sometimes they'll appear like how they looked in an old photo or something. Like, I don't know. I just think it, I find it very interesting to think about, like, what will that even be like?
I know, right?
Do we get to pick our favorite age? Maybe we're just our favorite age. Would that be good?
Oh boy, that would be a tough choice for me. I'm not even sure what that is.
but I mean, really, to bring this conversation back, because I really like to, for everyone in my audience and for all of my clients that I work with, I really like to bring all of these big concepts down to, like, what does it really mean for us in the way that we're actually living our everyday lives right now? Because as fun as it is to speculate, like, I'm, you know, I think it's fun to think about, like, ooh, will I just be able to, like, go to Saturn? Will I be able to go anywhere? Could I just, like, you know, could I walk on the sun? Would that be, like, I, you know, I don't know. You just think about, like, what would it be like? Well, like, you know, right now we think about how big the universe is, and you think, like, oh, well, because traveling at light speed won't even be an issue. I will just be where I want to be. So anyway, but that's what I'm trying to say is, I think that while those are all interesting, like, you know, to speculate, they're kind of fun thought experiments. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know, this would be cool. But I think what, at the end of the day, what's really important to us right now is, like, how does this knowledge, this belief in this resurrected, glorified body, like, and the dignity of our bodies, like, how does that actually translate to how we live right now?
Well, no, it's a great question. And I think, you know, the way I think about it is, you know, we are making these attempts to, you know, nurture our souls and take care of our bodies. Because I know, and I know you talk about this all the time with your clients and in your work, this emphasis, and it's something I always emphasize too, is just this reminder that we are not just our bodies. We are not just our souls. We are our bodies. We are our souls. We are this body-soul composite. So as much as we take to nurture our spirit, nurture our souls, we should be making a similar effort to then nurture our bodies, because both of those are expectant of what's coming at the end, right? Both of those, we prepare our spirits because we're living within the grace that God has given us. We're trying, we're aiming toward that end to be united with God, soul, but then also we're trying to be united with God in bodily also, you know, at the end. So it shouldn't be necessarily just this either or. It should be a both and. And that's like that's the great genius of the Catholic tradition, is it's a both and. And I think taking care of our bodies in the hope of the resurrection, I think nurtures the hope that we are going to be resurrected, and not just eschewing the body. We should be comfortable taking care of our bodies and taking care of our souls simultaneously with that faith, with that hope of what is coming, you know, at the resurrection, at the end.
No, I think like one difficulty that kind of arises, at least I know that it kind of has like for me, is this like thought of like a forward and upward projection, you know, like I think about in terms of, especially like when I think about my soul and my like path to sanctity. I've kind of heard it described once as like, if you were kind of looking at it like a chart, like a graph, right? Like you would start in the bottom left corner, and like top right corner is God and holiness and like unity. And so like ideally, you know, straight diagonal line goes across and like you get, you reach sanctity. But for most of us in our lives, it's more like, you know, a curvy line. It goes down, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up. And event, you know, like the intent, like the goal is that the basic trajectory is forward and up, right? You're going like towards God, towards holiness, on this path to sanctity. And so I think a lot, and like, I don't know, I've been kind of reassessing how I think about this lately, because I've been thinking about like holiness a lot more in terms of just like this deep relationship with Christ and not so much about progress. I think especially when I was a new convert, I was very obsessed with this idea of progress. And maybe this was like the former army officer in me too. And like, I wanted to be better. I wanted to get better and to be better and to be that quickly. You know, and I think it's obviously in the spiritual life, it's a long, long journey, you know, ending of course with our death. So we're never quite, we haven't arrived. We're not there yet. But I've been thinking about this a lot in terms of like our soul, we can continue to progress. We can continue to grow. In theory, we're continuing to get better in this like ever, ever upward spiral, or like, you know, line up, or however you want to visualize it or think about it. But basically it's this idea of like, this is the path to sanctity. This is like this growth in holiness. But I think that the difficulty when we think about this in terms of taking care of both body and soul, it's like, okay, we can see our souls continuing to progress our whole lives long. But with our bodies, especially as we get older, it's like kind of the opposite of that. Like we experience decline. We experience, it's not like we get more and more strong, like more like strength, more capabilities, more whatever in our physical bodies. What happens with our physical bodies is like we get stronger to a point. We get more capable to a point, but eventually our faculties will decline. Our eyesight is going to get a little bit worse. Our mobility might get a little bit worse. Like things, we age and we decline. So how do we reconcile this with knowing that caring for our bodies our whole life long in anticipation of the resurrection is still important?
Well, I a couple things to that. You know, the first part, you were talking about, you know, the bodily decay, you know, We just experienced lately, you know, we're just talking about the death of Dr. Kevin Vost, you know, just this last week. And that guy was in incredible shape, healthy, powerlifter, knew and understand these connections between mind, body, mind and soul connection, unity. I mean, he was a great Thomas guy into psychology, philosophy, all these things. He was super into that. And he just died suddenly, you know.
How did he die? Do you know?
I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. I'm presuming it's like a sudden illness, you know. I don't know. I don't want to speak, you know, out of turn here, but I just know the guy was incredibly healthy and took care of himself, and then just quickly, you know, died. And so that could happen for some people too. I remember back in my old army, my younger days as an army officer, I had an instructor. The guy was incredibly healthy, you know, was a great runner, was physically fit, sharp as attack, and then just dropped dead, you know, and it's just kind of mysterious. But so we could be in a peak state of physical, you know, health, mm-hmm. and still die, you know. But where I was going there was just, you know, again, going back to this mind-body unity, not just connection, unity. And I'm thinking back to just this past Lent. And I know you've talked about this, how some of these ascetical practices, like fasting, mm-hmm. Aren't just like disciplines for self-mastery, but ultimately they're trusting in God's providence. And as you enter into those things, you notice that there's a little bit of pain, but your body is also becoming healthier when you take upon some of those ascetical practices. You're still exercising, you're fasting, you're eating the right foods, you're getting better sleep. And you'll notice that sometimes when you do those things, I noticed this past Lent when I was doing those things, my prayer was more fruitful. Mm-hmm. I could focus better when I was reading scripture. And all those things were benefiting my soul, certainly. And so there was that great connection there. But of course, yeah, as you pointed out, our bodies are going to decay. They are going to break down. We are going to age, but we could enter into varying degrees of aging well, mm-hmm. as we continue to nurture our soul, remembering that unitive aspect of who we are as human people. That should be at the forefront of our minds all the time as we take care of ourselves. And God bless those of our senior brothers and sisters, you know, our elders that are striving to take really good care of themselves still. Mm-hmm. And notice that they're still sharp. And those that are the believers are experiencing very fruitful lives of faith too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those people that do take upon good health practices like diet, sleep, exercise, they also, that are also believers, they also understand that perspective of suffering too, when mm-hmm. the body does break down, mm-hmm. they have a greater insight into understanding that. So I think as we make that upward movement, that trajectory forward
of the soul,
mm-hmm. yeah, and our body starts to kind of also peak and then kind of maybe plateau and then start to decay, mm-hmm. you know, that connection has not been lost.
Yeah, you know? And you know, one of the things that I've been really interested in recently and I've been learning a lot about is just this concept of health span. Mm. And there's a lot of doctors who have been writing about this in recent years about basically, you know, and I think this is a misconception that we have of aging, that, you know, aging necessarily means that we're going to become super decrepit and mm-hmm. it's going to be really awful and we're going to be basically like relying on people to care for us for like a decade or more, or right. just having a really, you know, a really, really slow decline that just lasts forever until you finally die. And so I think when we have that image of aging, of course we think, oh my gosh, like we are going to, like, this is going to be horrible. Like, why would anyone, like, might as well eat bonbons now because,
right.
like, there's
and that's how a lot of people
but,
are thinking.
But the thing is, what longevity scientists are experiencing and learning, and like I think it's really funny, like the Silicon Valley biohackers, and I like the term biohacking. I think it's interesting. I think it's fun. I think it's interesting to think about things that we can do that will influence the way our bodies function. So mm-hmm. that's what I think about when I think about biohacking, and I use with my clients is like, okay, how can we hack your sleep? How can we hack your gut microbiome? How can we like maximize what you're doing? Recognizing that there's always a point to it. The point, of course, isn't so that we have these perfect bodies, because we know these aren't our glorified bodies right. yet. But the point is that these bodies enable us then to have that closer relationship with God and then to actually do the work that we were created to do at a much higher capacity, and we're much better equipped to do it.
Yeah.
So I think it's really funny, these you know, these biohackers, you know, and secular biohackers who are like, I'm going to live to be 130. And I'm like, is that like, I mean, I don't know. Like, that's not my goal. My goal, and it would be cool. Like, whatever. Right. God willing, I will live however God, however long God wants me to live. But my goal is to live in the best health that I possibly can for as long as I'm called to live in this health, not because for my own benefit, because it's so great, it feels awesome being healthy. And it does, it is, it does feel great. But it's like, it's because what does God want to do with me? And until he's finished with me, I want to be able to serve at that highest level.
Yeah. Yeah. You're mentioning the biohacking. I also think about like the transhumanists, you know, that are striving to live forever, and they'll figure out a way to maybe grow human organs or replace organs and appendages with like bionic parts, you know, and in order to make sure that I can live to be like 130.
Put my brain in a robot.
Yeah. Right. You know, because there's this huge, you know, again, and this is the false aspect of this of this mindset. It's like, well, I'm just going to do this on my own and try to figure it out by science.
Oh, yeah, because like I don't need God anymore because I can create what I need. Like I can grow new organs, so I don't need God.
Yes.
And that's, of course, as Catholics, we're taking this totally different stance, which is that like, this body is 100% guaranteed to die. Like we are 100% guaranteed to die. I don't know when, I don't know how, you know, this is all in God's hands and God's timing, but we do know for a like 100% certain fact that this body is going to die, but we also have hope in the resurrection. So we don't need to be afraid of this death because of the resurrection. Like the sting of death is gone. It's of course we still like mourn loved ones and, you know, there's still certain amounts of like fear surrounding it, just like natural fear. But I think like this whole like the dread that would come from just this mentality of thinking like there's nothing, like after this we're just nothing.
Right.
But instead we know like not only do our souls survive bodily death and go and are, you know, we meet God, but our bodies, again, we will be reunited with bodies that are now glorified.
This is
the hope. This is the hope of the resurrection.
Absolutely. And I get ready to close here. I love this great paragraph from the Catechism. Christ will raise us up on the last day. But it is also true that in a certain way, we have already risen with Christ. For by virtue of the Holy Spirit, Christian life is already now on earth a participation in the death and resurrection of Christ. So we're already living it. We should already be living like this is the body we're going to have at the resurrection. So we should, as I said earlier, we should take care of it. We should treat it as it is, a gift of God that he's given us. And this was the intent from the beginning. God did not make us in the beginning just to be souls. He made the angels. Done. Those are already disembodied spirits. But he made us to be body and soul, which tells us in the end, that's what it's going to come back to. It's going to come back to us being reunited in that state of grace, in union with God and each other, sharing that love, that communion of persons in the Holy Trinity on this world, on this earth, a renewed earth.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, this earth, these bodies, renewed, transformed, glorified, evolved, going back to the evolutionary leap part
again. It's so exciting. You know, the really cool thing, the exciting thing about God is he is a God of wonderful surprises.
Yeah,
and so while we have some inklings about what these bodies might be like and what capabilities they might have and how amazing the resurrection is going to be, the truth is, eye has not seen and ear has not heard. Like, right. God has something in store for us that is going to just knock our socks off.
Yeah.
And it's exciting.
It is exciting.
It's cool to think about.
Yes.
But it's cool, too, that we get to experience a little bit of it even here on Earth. And so, you know, I think that's part of what people experience when they're living in these states of a state of grace, a state of, you know, close, deep prayer life, and also being, you know, taking good care of their physical bodies. You're experiencing so many amazing things here on this earth right now. So, well, this has been really fun. Thank you so much for walking all the way down the hallway.
It was a long trip.
Well, thank you again, David. I appreciate you being here. And yeah, maybe we'll have you on the show again.
It was great to be here, honey. Thank you.
I hope that you enjoyed that conversation with David. And if in the course of listening to it, you felt inspired to take better care of this beautiful body that God has given you, I invite you to consider joining me as a coaching client. I have a few slots available in my calendar right now for new clients, and we really would work together to optimize the health of not only your body, but also your mind and your soul. I love taking this holistic approach with my clients and making sure that we are taking the absolute best care of ourselves that we possibly can so that we can glorify God in our bodies and in our lives. So the way that works is if you are even a little bit curious about what it would look like to work with me as your coach, I invite you to book a free call with me at athrivingcatholic.com/free call. And we'll basically spend some time talking about what your goals are, what you hope to achieve. We'll look for any hidden roadblocks, any obstacles that might be sabotaging you on your path to success, what's keeping you from reaching your goals. And then we'll make sure that you leave that call feeling renewed and re-energized and ready to take action, whether that means joining me as a coaching client or not. I think you will still get a lot of value out of this call. So if you want to just kind of dip your toes, see what it would be like to work with me as your coach, you can book a free call at athrivingcatholic.com/free call. Okay, I will put this link also in the show notes. And until next week, I pray that you have a very, very blessed Easter season, Easter octave. And I will be back with more content soon.